Welcome to the iHeart Indie Show, where we interview your favorite indie devs about their lives in the industry. Today we're going into the life of Daniel Doan, the creator of Sanctuary RPG. We'll talk about how he got into video games, some of the programming choices that he made, how he marketed it, and finally, a fun little bit at the end.
I'm Daniel Doan. I'm the co-founder and CGO of Buckshell Media. We are a video game marketing agency and publishing company. Essentially, I've been doing game development and video game marketing for the past half decade. I've worked with hundreds of game developers, helping them with their growth strategy, branding, and getting more sales. And I also do game design consultation and help game developers improve their core engagement loops and make better games.
Which came first? Was it the game development or the publishing side of things?
Yeah, so basically I started working on this game called Sanctuary RPG back in college. And at the time, I was really bored of my programming class because, it was super basic. The class, kind of moved at like a snail's pace. And I was like, I kind of want to learn on my own pace. So I actually stopped going to lecture, and I ended up just, learning more about programming via YouTube and working, on Sanctuary RPG as like kind of like a learning exercise. And, I would actually show up to class only to ace the midterm and the final. But I kind of ended up using Sanctuary RPG as a way to like teach myself how to code. But it kind of turned into this like crazy game that took off on Steam.
Were you interested in programming in high school?
Kind of. So I've been making games for a very long time. I started out designing games as a kid. Growing up, I would make board games here and there. I'd play test them with my friends down the street. And then I would, do that for a while. And then it kind of transitioned over to modding games. So I would take like little JavaScript games online, and then I would modify the code and share them with friends. And then I also did like custom maps for games such as Age of Empires, Warcraft 2, stuff like that back in the day. And so I've always had, like a game design mindset, but I never actually got into programming up until college because I think I remember being like, 12 years old or something like that, and like trying to learn programming for the first time. And my dad, he handed me this, C++ book. And at the time, it was super intimidating. And he's like, well, if you want to make games, learn this. And I was just like, this is like way beyond my comprehension. So I actually stopped, trying to learn programming up until college, where I, kind of wanted to like get into it. I was pursuing a psychology degree at the time. And then I just, got interested, took the class, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's easier than I expected. So then I just, got kind of carried away.
What inspired the creation of Sanctuary RPG? I know you were learning and, you kind of use this as a project, but why that style of game?
Well, quite honestly, it was the only thing that I knew how to make. The class was teaching, I think it was like put stuff onto the console, and just basic just super basic programming stuff. And then I kind of realized that, wow, like I can actually use the super basic stuff to make a real video game. And that was super mind-blowing in and of itself, because I thought that you had to know like much more to actually make a video game. But then I realized, wow, like after like the very first day of intro to CS 101, I could actually make this. And so I felt that I had to use basically all that I knew how to do at the time to make what I wanted to. I only knew so much, but I wanted to like do a lot with it, and so I guess that's the common motif of Sanctuary RPG.
Did it start off with like a bunch of if-then statements or like cases? Did you optimize it differently later on, or did you kind of stick with the same style of programming for the whole game?
It started off, with a bunch of like if-then statements, then it gradually kind of progressed into like switches, and then I eventually added like classes in there, and I kind of like refactored the code over and over again a couple of times. But you know, honestly, the code is still horrible even to this day. And you know, I have honestly no qualms about that, because you know, I did what I could with what I knew at the time. And in retrospect, you know, it was like a horrible way of doing it, but it was the only way that I knew how to progress, right? And so like a lot of you know, game developers that I talk to these days, you know, they'll be like, oh well, you know, I'll like start on like a game or something like that, and then the code's horrible, so I'm gonna start over. And I feel like that can hurt people, because if your objective is to make and ship a commercial game, starting over and over again isn't gonna help that, right? So yeah, so I feel like even though my code is horrible and still is horrible, I came out with a finished product that, you know, reached the masses. And to me, I feel like that's the ultimate learning experience.
Mm. So this was Black Shells Media's first commercial game. Were there any doubts in anyone's mind about a text-based game being the first commercial game?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I actually honestly didn't mean to profit from this game at all. You know, it was honestly just like a labor of love and a labor of learning and like a labor of, I guess, creativity, right? So I wanted to learn programming. I wanted to, you know, practice my skills. I wanted to create an action RPG kind of game in text-based form, and I wanted to practice marketing. So I guess in a way, I turned like a learning experience into something greater by accident almost, because, you know, like it's just all about, one, how do I do this? Two, how do I turn this, you know, into like a sustainable thing? And then three, how do I guess kind of like snowball that success into more success.
When did the art style come in?
The game actually didn't really have art for a long time. I kind of used ASCII art, you know, from the internet as like a placeholder for a good year or so. And then I actually recruited people off of Reddit to help me with art and like sound, stuff like that. And so the game has always been kind of ASCII art-ish, but the I guess quote-unquote high quality art came in when our awesome artist Angel from Reddit, you know, kind of just, you know, swept in and was like, hey, like I can help you guys, you know, with this project, you know, fill me in. And then, so we onboarded him. And then, I believe there's like a couple hundred, hand drawn art assets in the game, which is mind blowing because, you know, like I'm just picturing him like, you know, putting each little, you know, character there like over and over again. I'm just like, wow, that is impressive.
How long did it take him to create all the art for the game?
I think he was working part time, and it took him probably like half a year.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Did he become part of the team, or is that like contracted out?
So the whole team's on like a revenue share basis. Since I was a broke college student at the time, couldn't afford to pay anyone, so I was just like, hey, if you want to join my team, you know, I can hook you up with like a percentage of revenue.
How does this text-based game weigh in over 100 megabytes?
So most of it is the audio. I think there's more than 80 unique tracks, which is pretty crazy.
Speaking about the audio, I always struggle to find a good question to ask about audio, because I think it takes like a different type of intelligence to create music. I don't know if it's just me, but that's how I feel. Who created the audio? How did you find that person?
Yeah, so the audio composer, his name is Rafael. He's a super famous composer in Brazil. And at the time, he was trying to break into video game soundtracks. And so he was, you know, just partnering with me on Sanctuary RPG. And I found on Reddit, I believe like a mutual friend introduced us together. And he was just like, hey, you know, I really like your game. I would love to, you know, help you flesh out the music, because, you know, I noticed that the game didn't have sound. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a perfect way to, I guess, partner with someone who could, you know, do things that I couldn't, because, you know, like I was, you know, I'm kind of like a hobbyist composer. You know, I try to get into music back in the day, but, you know, obviously I'm nowhere near as talented as him. So I was like, hey, well, you know, it'd be awesome to have you on the team, and the rest is history.
the art, the audio, everything just kind of came together so nicely in this game.
Thank you.
Quick quiz. Do you know what ASCII stands for?
Dang. Wow. That.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody actually remembers what it stands for. It's American Standard Code for Information Interchange.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I totally knew that.
So with all the text floating around, are there any hidden messages or some type of subliminal message that's being sent or something that the untrained eye wouldn't be able to see?
How do you mean by that?
The way I'm thinking about it is, I'm not sure if you've ever seen like the Disney movies. If you look at The Lion King, there's a scene where the leaves just kind of blow by. But if you pause it, it spells out sex.
Oh.
Like anything like that.
So like, no, as far as, you know, as to what I know, but you know, maybe Angel could have, you know, snuck stuff in there. And I probably wouldn't know about it. So, if you're playing the game right now, then, you know, try to see if there's sex somewhere in there. Yeah, maybe.
Hey, there's sex everywhere. Did you guys run into any hurdles with resolution changes and the text appearing on the screen?
Yeah. So the game is kind of locked at like one specific resolution, and we kind of ran into, you know, issues at first with people having like smaller monitors and like smaller resolutions, but I ended up having to add in support for like multiple I guess downscaling and upscaling so that you know, it would kind of like adjust to the player's monitor.
The game might look intimidating to some because of its old school style, but it's incredibly easy to get into, to follow and to play. Well, except for Permadeath, but even then there's an easy mode. Were there any games that might have inspired the direction that the game took or the way you went about the battle system?
Yeah, so for my whole I guess game development career, I've always wanted to remake the game Diablo. So it's like a, you know, like an action RPG with like loot and with, you know, random encounters and stuff. And so I kind of wanted to, I guess, emulate the best parts of Diablo 1, 2, and Diablo 3 in Sanctuary RPG. So like a lot of it was, I guess, me just trying to say, hey, so like what would Diablo look like if it were a text-based game?
The game is pretty humorous. I think it hits a perfect centroid of humor. Did the team had any input into the humor, or did it all come from the writer?
So like initially, I added humor into the game because, quite frankly, I was bored. So, you know, I was just coding away, you know, at the combat and with the engine, and I was like, you know, I need to entertain myself, or else this is gonna be too boring for me. So I ended up adding humor to the game, just like, you know, random humor and like, you know, just like absurdism because, you know, it's kind of random. And then, you know, I was like, oh wow, people actually like this stuff. So then I, you know, kind of doubled down on it. And then eventually, there were two more writers that I onboarded, Heeshin and Dorian. And I kind of wanted them to, I guess, you know, add to the writing, you know, like in that same vein of humor. And so that turned out pretty well. But the writing is, I guess, kind of random, kind of quirky, but you know, hopefully it's not too much.
Was any dialogue cut from the game, or anything that you guys wanted to put in that you kind of took out?
That's a good question. I actually don't remember, if I'm being completely honest.
In the beginning of the game, you get to design your character. Do you ever get to see them?
That's a good question. So, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you can see your character when you open up the character menu during the game. I think if you press, like, C or something, that you can go to the character menu and see your character.
After the release of this game, since it was Black Shells Media's first release, did you guys learn anything from actually releasing the game?
We learned that it's really hard to do marketing. And so I had to, you know, kind of double down on marketing process after I did the launch. So like, there's a lot of game developers these days that, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, if I make a good game, you know, people will come and play it. But, you know, that's obviously not the case. Like, it takes a lot of hard work in terms of, you know, trying to find the right people, you know, trying to get players to actually play the game, give feedback. And then the biggest lesson that I learned was that trying to get people to actually play was super hard.
I always ask that question to everyone I interview, and it's the same answer every single time. A lot of developers are developers. They're making a game for the first time, and that's their goal. And they don't have anyone else to market the game. It's obvious that the art style of the game made Sanctuary RPG stand out from the crowd. What else did you guys do to make people click and see what this game was really about?
The most powerful tactic that we used to market the game was to basically market the game to its target audience on Reddit. And, you know, kind of release the game for free, right? So Sanctuary RPG has two kind of games. There's Sanctuary RPG Classic, which is the free version, and there's Sanctuary RPG Black Edition, which is the paid version on Steam. And the game actually took off right after we, you know, marketed and launched the free version, which you know, kind of led into the paid version. And like, a lot of people, you know, upgraded to the paid version. And like, a lot of people told their friends. And so I guess it was like the free version was kind of like a honeypot, like an accidental honeypot, to get players interested and, you know, to like make players realize that, oh, wow, like this game is actually like a good game. Right. And then after they, you know, got their money's worth off of the free version, you know, they would later find out that, oh, well, like I'm working on this paid version. It's like twice the content, you know, it's much more polished, stuff like that. And, you know, they were more than happy to like support me and purchase the paid game.
By the way, the $7.99 price tag is an incredible value. How did you come up with that number, $7.99?
So at the time, I kind of felt like anything more than $10 was, you know, kind of too much for an indie game. You know, I had a lot of people telling me that, oh, well, like, you know, you should make the game $110. So I was like, okay. And then I kind of surveyed more and more people, and I realized that like $5 was a little bit too low for the time. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe $8 is a good enough price for it. So I launched at $8. And it's been doing pretty well.
Okay, that's good to hear. It's a really, I can't even stress how good the value is. The game has a number of updates throughout time. I mean, you guys are constantly making sure that the bugs are crushed and even adding new content. It's obvious this benefits the players, but how does this benefit a small indie team? Where are the resources coming from to offer free updates?
I guess it's all about, you know, trying to give back to the community as much as possible. Whenever someone buys like a game, they're expecting that you know, there's you know, patches that fix bugs. There's like minor content updates here and there, and basically like they want to know that the developer genuinely cares about them. You know, as opposed to, oh, well, I'm just gonna release this money or this game and then try to make some money off it, then run, right? So after releasing Sanctuary RPG, I, for the first few weeks on Steam, I basically just, you know, like kept like a visual eye on the Steam forums, and then I would, you know, update the game, you know, a couple times every day even, and I would just, you know, be constantly fixing bugs, constantly adding new content to the game, and basically, you know, telling people that, hey, you know, I genuinely care about this game. I genuinely care that, you know, you know, took the time to, you know, support me and purchase this game for me, and I'm gonna do my I guess best to like serve you and give you more than what you paid for.
Would you say that financially the game was successful? Like, I don't want to get into too much detail with money or anything, unless if you're willing to, but would you say it was like super successful or like medium or like, you know, just good enough?
Yeah, so I would definitely say that the game was successful enough for me to like warrant making like a second game, which is why Overture came out afterwards. But honestly, the market is, you know, pretty rough, and so after a while, like, it's hard to, I guess, push copies without actually doing like steep discounts, which kind of hurts the developer in a way, because, you know, like if it's harder for them to, you know, keep up the sales, then it's harder for them to justify, you know, working on the game. So like personally, even though Sanctuary RPG was a pretty good success when it launched, these days the hype has kind of died down. But I still, you know, try to help, give back to the people who supported me by, you know, continuing to offer them value.
Do you think that this game being released only on one platform kind of hurt the sales figures a little?
It's easier for a developer to like release on one platform as a, you know, like a small team, because the porting process can get pretty intense. I feel like it's kind of like a double-edged sword. I technically could try to port the game to console and, you know, kind of rework the control scheme and such to like make it function well, but I'm not sure that it'd be worth my time because, you know, like it would cost a lot of time and money. There's kind of no good estimation of profits when it comes to, you know, the in-game market. I guess the analogy is kind of like a recording artist, right? So you know, you come up with like an album, like it sells pretty well, awesome, and you have this fan base, right? And yeah, like you can sure like you can, you know, port it to like different mediums. You could, you know like release like another album, but there's no guarantee at the end of the day how many copies, you know, you think that, you know, it's gonna sell, and like whether or not like it's worth your time. So yeah, it's actually pretty rough.
Do you think it will ever come to Switch? Switch seems to be doing really well as far as indies go.
I don't want to give like a definitive answer. You know, it's like a maybe.
Okay. Sanctuary RPG on Switch confirmed. I kind of only have one more question for you, and I always ask this question to everyone. Most people have a game or games, plural, that they heart, but it isn't very popular. These are what we usually call hidden gems. Do you have any hidden gems that you like to share with anyone?
Oh wow, that's a really good question. I've actually never had that question asked before, so it's kind of catch me off guard here. A hidden gem. I would have to say that it's a game called Castle of the Winds. Have you heard of it?
No, I'm writing it down as we speak so I can look it up after this.
So like, I'm not sure if it, like, it's still like a gem in 2017, but it was a gem when I first played it. I think I was like 10 years old or something like that. I was shopping with my mom at like a 99 cent store, and I noticed that it was on the shelf, and I was like, okay, well, it looks pretty cool. There's a warrior like on the front. And so I bought it for like a dollar. And that ended up being one of my favorite games of all time, right? And then that kind of eventually, you know, led me to, you know, enjoy these, you know, classic RPGs and this, you know, kind of like roguelike, action roguelike kind of gameplay. So which, you know, really inspired me to, you know, play Diablo, which led to Sanctuary RPG. So in a way, that game led me to make Sanctuary RPG.
Well, there we go, folks. Full circle. And by the way, once a gem, always a gem. There's no coming back from it, even if it's just yours. Well, I'd like to thank you again so much for taking the time to do this interview with me. I really, really, really appreciate it. Unless if there's anything else you'd like to share with anyone, this is pretty much it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I do have a question for you though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
All right. So what is your hidden gem?
Oh my gosh. Why did I not think of the answer of this beforehand? Oh no. Oh no. You are not asking me this question. Man, okay. There's this one game I played on Game Boy. It was in black and white, and I didn't even have a Game Boy. I had a Super Game Boy, which is the cartridge for the Super Nintendo, and you put the Game Boy card in there. And I play this. It's a single play game. I would play with my friend because it's a puzzle game. It's a Snoopy puzzle game. I don't know the full name of it, but it's so good. Now looking at it from this point of view, it's really like one of those, you know, you push the block and you kind of find a way out of the maze type of thing. That's my hidden gem. I will always remember that game, and I'm going to purchase this on eBay right after this conversation.
Oh, wow. That is dedication. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, no, thank you again for being here and for asking me that question as well. So it was a pleasure. It really was. It was an honor, actually. Thank you so much.
Thank you.